Hi, I'm Rob Wright, and I'm here with CRN's Chad Bernstein, and we are here to discuss telecom carriers and some of the things that the telcos are doing in the channel these days. Chad, I know that you have done a lot of coverage in the telecom sector recently, writing about some of the things that they are doing as they take an interest in the channel. This is sort of a new thing, if I understand it correctly. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're seeing with the telco carriers?
Absolutely. And I think it's important to kind of point out, you know, what's new versus what's kind of always been around. I mean, when we talk about, you know, what's going on in the telco channel as it relates to VARs, what we mean is we at CRN are seeing, you know, this big push by a lot of the different carriers and service providers to embrace VARs, particularly IT VARs, with more of a hardware software resale background than ever before. And on the flip side of that, you know, we're seeing a lot more VARs embrace adding carrier services to the types of sales that they do and the types of deals they put together more than ever before. I mean, you know, VARs have been selling carrier services for a long time. I mean, mm-hmm. at least a decade, and many of the folks we've spoken to on a regular basis to kind of get a handle on this trend have been doing it for even longer than that. So it's nothing new, but I think the consensus and what really drove us to put together this this package for CRN and also deep dive a little bit more in this area than we have in the past is that it is happening with greater frequency now. And what's changed about it is not only the move by VARs toward a more annuity-led, a more recurring revenue service-oriented type of sale, but also, you know, the carriers certainly looking beyond their more traditional stable of agents and routes to market that way, and seeing, you know, seeing the types of customers that they really want to get at as being the chief customers of a lot of these IT VARs. So we've written variations on this story for many years, but this time it's different, and we are looking at a lot of the reasons why it is different.
So you had mentioned that this is something that we've seen before, and you know, I remember years ago when I first started covering the channel, there was a lot of I guess interest from the telecom players out there in recruiting resellers, recruiting solution providers, building out that sort of virtual sales force to go out there and help them sell their internet service when, you know, that was really taking off, you know, DSL. And it just never really happened the way that I think a lot of people expected it to happen. That sort of interest in the channel sort of it began to wane a little bit. There are still a lot of VARs today that are skeptical about working with telcos. How is that, I guess, how have we gone from that point to this point?
Well, I think a couple things, based on what we've heard, Rob, you know, certainly the telcos themselves, some of the carriers have become a lot more channel savvy, and mm-hmm. by that we mean they're architecting programs that take into account the ways in which IT VARs integrators are typically compensated, and trying to ease them into this model of residual revenues, of commissions, of the annuity type streams that are really, really common, are the bread and butter in the carrier agent world. But to still many VARs, I think, who are used to one-time sales, who are used to big upfront payments as a result of hardware and software integrations, like a lot of these guys with their reseller backgrounds mm-hmm. certainly are. It can take the VARs a little bit longer in some cases to be more embracing of a model where, instead of an upfront payment, you get a residual payment, a very small residual payment, a couple months later, once everything is processed on the back end with the carriers. And, when you start out with those types of sales, those residual payments can be quite small, very, very tiny service type payments that come as a result of, you know, implementing the carrier service. But
sure,
when you start talking, you know, more of these types of deals going in, more, advanced phone systems, higher levels of service and more customers, when you start to pile up all of those littler residuals, the margins and certainly the payouts over time, especially that, you know, you do get it on a residual pace, on a residual basis. And in many cases for as long as the life of the contract with the carrier, that can add up. I mean, in some cases for national deals, we've heard of VARs who, in addition to, say, a six-figure hardware, software, traditional IT reseller integration, can add as much as, on average, 15 to 18 percentage points of margin based on the strength of those residuals and enjoy that 15%, you know, not just in year one, but all the way out to year three, year four, and, you know, in some cases longer. I mean, I think, Rob, the point is residual revenue. I mean, that's one of the big things we've been talking for years about, obviously, is the need by resellers to move to a services model, to develop annuity revenue streams so that, you know, they have that annuity as a lifeline, especially in downward economic periods. And so I think one of the things we've heard is that more VARs are embracing of the types of compensation schemes favored by carriers now, because a lot more of them, especially those that have managed services practices, get the compensation model a little bit better, understand, you know, how services-based compensation works.
So you had mentioned earlier that some but not all of the carriers are doing a good job in this respect in terms of taking an interest in channel partners and courting solution providers. What are some examples? Who do you think is really making their presence known right now?
Well, I from what we've heard, and there's another kind of micro trend happening, you know, within this, and that's veteran IT channel talent. That's the folks who are now showing up to run these channel programs at a lot of the carriers. A perfect example I can think of is Nigel Williams, who was for many years a VP at Cisco and was the channel chief for Linksys, mm-hmm. following Cisco's acquisition, and he now runs the indirect channel program over at Level 3. Communications. And, you know, Nigel, he was one of the folks we spoke to for, you know, this most recent package. And I mean, he put it very succinctly. I mean, he said that, you know, VARs don't want to have to compete with carriers the same way, you know, in the more traditional channel model that they're familiar with. They don't want to have to compete with a vendor's direct sales force.
Right.
And what they've seen in the past is that a lot of carriers who, you know, purport to have strong channel programs simply don't get that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are difficulties with rules of engagement and who, you know, who gets to bring what part of the sale in and who gets compensated when, versus, you know, all the other things that give VARs headaches and heartburn on a regular basis in the channel. So, you know, what Level 3 has done, unlike many of its carrier peers and many of its service provider peers, is, you know, it's turning a large percentage of that carrier-led business over purely to partners, and is not like, you know, like some of its peers, it's not also a reseller of certain, you know, of certain hardware platforms. I mean, just to give an example that Nigel and many VARs brought up is that, you know, VARs want to partner with Verizon, for example, on mm-hmm. on a carrier services basis. But if I'm a VAR who sells Cisco, Verizon is also a gold level VAR that sells Cisco. So what's going to prevent Verizon from, you know, using its leverage, using its largesse to take me out of the hardware sale, to undercut me, and you know, bring about that kind of channel conflict and competition that we've seen so many times in the past? So, you know, what Nigel told us was level three isn't going to get those certifications. It's not going to go gold with Cisco. It's not going to adopt that reseller model, just to make very clear to its partners that, you know, it wants its partners to lead the sale so that everybody wins. So level three, one example. Another really interesting program where we have seen is from Comcast, Comcast Business Services, led by another longtime channel veteran, Craig Schlagbaum, more of a traditional agent carrier channel sales model. But, you know, Craig, very, very understanding guy of the needs of a lot of and concerns of a lot of these IT VARs, and has, you know, has helped build the program over there into a tiered level of partnership that can be, you know, a commission or, you know, one time fee based on referrals and on up from there to being a very strategic channel partner of Comcast. So I think what's distinguishing kind of the net here, Rob, what's distinguishing some of the better programs, some of the more channel savvy programs, you know, from some of the, I guess you'd call them more flawed programs that are less channel friendly is, you know, is these, not only these programs, but these executives that do embrace the fact that VARs aren't necessarily used to being compensated in the way that agents are, and architecting different tiers, different options in the program based on that. And that above all speak to the VARs want to be compensated and understand, you know, how they're going to be compensated, and also have a relationship with a carrier who understands that their business model is in many cases not at all like that of an agent's.
Right. One of the things that we've seen a lot of lately is this consolidation trend, and a lot of acquisitions and mergers. And we've seen some companies like Verizon and Quest buy, I guess you could call them solution providers, but cloud computing companies. How is cloud sort of affecting, I guess, the interest level and how and how the telco carriers are going about working with the channel? Is that making them more attractive for channel partners? Are they looking are these telco carriers looking to become cloud service providers in a way?
I think a lot of them are. I think, you know, a lot of them are also using their managed services practices, or those of VARs, of solution providers they're looking to partner with and even buy as springboard to cloud. I mean, I think obviously cloud computing, a big trend, not going away, and something that is being steadily defined from a money making perspective, you know, as it becomes more prevalent. Everyone wants to participate, so I think, you know, that's part of why you're seeing this land grab, you know, a lot of cloud providers being acquired by bigger folks, and, you know, a lot of necessarily smaller providers merging together, a lot of service providers acquiring VARs. You really are seeing all different levels of compensation, because I think, you know, and I think others would say this as well, everyone just wants more arrows in their quiver. You know, everyone wants to kind of make sure they can come at a services-led model of channel selling that is going to best equip them for cloud better than the guy down the street. So you are seeing some really interesting M&A moves happening both within and adjacent to the telco channel right now. And I think that every single one of the sources I've spoken to, from channel chiefs to VARs to service providers to master agencies up and down, you know, the telco and IT channel stacks, not one person doesn't think it'll continue, you know, especially with, it has to be said, with the downturn having made some companies not only willing to be acquired, but willing to be acquired for cheap.
And if you look at the telecom market, I mean, you have to start to wonder how many of these guys can be supported. I mean, you have the big players like Verizon and AT&T, obviously, but then you have Comcast, you have smaller players. It just looks like this is going to be a very competitive market going forward as companies try to either stay independent or do a lot of acquisitions to build up their market share. Is that a good thing for the channel partners then that may be working with these guys? Is that sort of level of competition, I guess, that comes from consolidation, is that going to be a good thing for those guys?
I don't know. I think that, you know, that's going to remain to be seen. I mean, I think, you know, I think in part they're going to try and make it as good a thing as they can, because it's going to happen whether they like it or not. Mm-hmm. But I think that I think that there's some concern as well. I mean, as more, you know, as more channel friendly companies are acquired by less channel friendly companies, you know, there's always a concern that programs sure. change, that relationships are going to get hurt and all that. But it's going to be really fascinating to watch, you know, what happens with a lot of this ongoing M&A activity. I mean, to me, in the service provider channel, one of the more interesting companies to me is Paytech, which, you know, not only has a pretty aggressive direct sales force, but also has a channel program, has been working with, you know, with VARs and service providers for a long time, but is also, you know, and has done this for, you know, much of the last 10 years, but in, you know, the past 2 years made, some much more dramatic moves, is also acquiring VARs. Mm. You have a company like Paytech that has acquired two major, national Avaya VARs in the last 18 months, one being Quagga based out in California and the other being Zeta Technologies based in Oklahoma. And, you know, what Paytech's been saying is they wanted those VARs in-house to help expand Paytech's footprint to a national footprint, being in the West Coast and Midwest. And, you know, they'll readily acknowledge that by buying VARs, that's naturally going to bring them into more conflict, more sales conflict with the VARs that they partner with. And, you know, what Paytech's saying is, what they've told us at CRN anyway, is they're looking to cover their bets against those VARs that they partner with, but, you know, VARs that also partner not only with Paytech, but also with Level 3 and the legion of Paytech's competitors on the service provider side. They're looking to cover their bets against those VARs, bringing non-Paytech carrier services into deals. And, you know, Paytech will say straight up, we know there's conflict, but at the same time, the rules of engagement are pretty clear. If you bring in, and I'm quoting back what company representatives told me, if you're bringing in Paytech carrier services in your deals, in your hardware software reseller deals, and there isn't going to be any problem. But, you know, they have to guard against VARs who partner with Paytech but are bringing in their competitors. So it's it creates, I mean structurally speaking, I think it creates a level of conflict for the Paytech channel that a lot of VARs are uncomfortable with. But in the competitive climate like we have now, I mean, you know, you've got to credit Paytech also for covering its bases like that.
Mm-hmm. So we have the carriers who are trying to obviously increase their reach with the channel, and they have a lot of new services to offer just besides their traditional telephone services or cable services or whatever. You have the channel partners that are, in some cases, not just interested but desperate for recurring revenue, some type of predictable revenue stream, whether it's for managed services, internet service, cloud computing, what have you. It seems like it's a pretty good match, but what are some of the challenges that we're going to have as this moves forward? What are some of the obstacles that may prevent this from being a sort of ideal situation for both sides?
Well, I think training is one aspect that's come up quite frequently. I mean, you know, for every VAR that that knows his or her way around advanced carrier services like MPLS, like SIP trunks, all the others that are kind of big sellers right now. I mean, there are still more channel partners, right, you know, to whom that stuff is Greek, you know, and it's a different type of, it's just, I think overall, Rob, it's just a different type of sales model than a lot of them are used to.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of what I've heard, especially from a lot of the master agents who, you know, by nature of the fact that they represent the carriers to a lot of different sub agents and partners, get to see where a lot of the rubber meets the road on this. You know, they still see a lot of the same pushback from bars that they did 10 years ago on the same subject, which is, I don't want to train my guys to do these services that I'm not familiar with. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be a phone company. I don't want to be compensated, you know, with tiny checks, with a bunch of tiny little payments instead of the lump sum payment I'm used to, and especially not be compensated months down the line, you know, after a deal is closed. I mean, I think for all the hype and for all the excitement that we're bringing to this discussion, it's still a trend very much in its infancy. I think a lot that once bars get to see, you know, and in some cases they can expand the margins on their sales well into the double digits, and it's with some carriers and with some types of sales north of 20%, you know, there will be a class of channel partner that sees that as money being left on the table.
Yeah.
There'll be another class of channel partner that, still kind of spurns the model, you know, as being, hey, maybe lucrative, but not worth the investment to completely transform us into having carrier services. And, you know, there will still be, a class of channel partner who sees carrier service providers as competitors first and foremost, taking away potential hardware and services sales, and just says, you know, hell with it. You know, there's not enough proof out there that it's worth the substantial investment on my part to try and make this work with carriers who sell a lot of the same types of solutions I do. At blanket cost. So I think, I think we're going to have to revisit a couple years down the line and see what's going to be what.
Okay. Well, I don't want to let you go without discussing some of the other areas that you focus on, particularly obviously the networking market, and check in on the latest with Cisco as well as some others. But we know that Cisco's been going through a lot lately. What's the latest with them?
Well, I, from a reporter's perspective, Rob, maybe no better time in recent years to be covering Cisco, because it's one thing after another.
And yeah,
I'm obviously being a little bit facetious with regard to their recent troubles, but a lot of good things happening at Cisco as well, and a lot of encouragement among channel partners. Cisco, you know, as we said in kind of recent discussions that we've had on this, Rob, is going through a major structural transformation right now. They're going to be laying off 6,500 full-time employees.
Yeah.
And on top of that, if you add in the 5,000 or so employees that are going to be going to the Chinese manufacturing company Foxconn as a result of Cisco selling a facility in Juarez, Mexico, and also the 600 or so employees that were let go by Cisco as a result of closing down its Flip video camera, the number is north of 11,000 of employees who will have departed Cisco as we enter its new fiscal year next month. And part of that, of course, part of that 6,500 is 2,100, I believe, folks who opted for Cisco's voluntary early retirement program. Very lucrative packages.
So I've read
early retirement benefits go, but at the same time, Cisco came right out and said that in that band of 6,500 employees, its vice president and up level ranks are going to be reduced either in part by the retirement, part by the layoffs, by 15%. And you can read that one way as removing, some would say, needless bureaucracy in Cisco's top ranks, but no question that Cisco is also losing many veteran talents. I mean, one of Cisco's top partners told me kind of behind the scenes recently that as much as you never want to see layoffs of this kind, especially with the macroeconomy struggling, all that Cisco talent coming out of Cisco and on the market, so to speak, is going to be a goldmine to a lot of these solution providers who can bring into their own folds, you know, folks, sales executives, marketing, engineering talent that they've worked with, you know, from a VAR to vendor relationship for many years. So I think it's going to be interesting to see where a lot of these executives end up. I've done some initial checks with smaller networking vendors like say ShoreTel and other folks, and you know, everyone's confirmed to me with varying degrees of disclosure that Cisco resumes are turning from a trickle into a torrent. You know, there's a lot of ex Cisco folks turning up at places like ShoreTel, like Huawei, like you know, a number of different companies all over the valley and beyond. So that's one effect. I think the other thing that we have heard, you know, frequently from some of Cisco's top and most trusted partners is that this is going to be a net positive for Cisco. You know, they're going to streamline. They have a stated objective to get simpler in every aspect of how they do business with customers and partners. CRN had an exclusive interview with Rob Lloyd, Executive Vice President, Worldwide Operations, and Cisco's top sales executives. And he was the first of Cisco's top people to go on the record with a publication and say definitively that more resources, not fewer, more, you know, are going to be available to Cisco channel partners as a result of all this restructuring. So I think, you know, the refrain we've been hearing from Cisco's most loyal, you know, gold, silver partners is this is going to make them better. It's going to refocus them. If there's one thing Cisco hates, as we've said many times, Rob, it's bad press. And, that's certainly been ailing, mighty Cisco in recent months.
Yeah. As you well know, not an easy beat. Well, I will say this about Cisco. You mentioned their partners and the reception that they've been getting from their top level partners, their strongest partners. They do have a very strong, very loyal channel. One that you know, always seems to stick by them, always seems to believe in them. Obviously, big fans of their products and their margins that come along with some of those expensive products. It doesn't seem like they're going to be hurt too badly, but I guess going forward in the networking space, this is making them a little bit obviously vulnerable, not just for the likes of a big rival like HP, but also Juniper, ShoreTel, and some of the others that you mentioned going forward, correct?
Absolutely. And the thing that we do hear from most partners and also that we have heard from, you know, from Cisco itself is they get that, you know, it's not like even a few years back when you had Cisco as the unquestioned king of the networking channel and the networking technology space, you know, with a few competitors nipping at its heels. I mean,
right.
Cisco is being challenged everywhere. And, you know, where it isn't being challenged, you know, on large scale networking portfolio comparisons, like it is being with HP's very aggressive networking unit, it's being bested in individual technology areas. I mean, I don't think it's any secret that you know, F5 Networks, for example, blew way past Cisco, you know, in the category of application delivery controllers. And there are other more niche-y, I would say, areas like that, you know, where Cisco's fallen behind best of breed competitors, even though it has a compelling solution that's part of the Cisco lineup. Mm-hmm. So I think it stands to reason right now that, you know, the biggest threat at the moment to Cisco is HP. HP certainly has made no bones whatsoever about the fact that it's going after Cisco hard, and it's you know, it's really looking to take away significant pieces of Cisco's networking dominance, and not do that 10 years from now and do it sooner rather than later. You know, the backdrop of all that, Rob, as we all know, being this ongoing clash of the titans between Cisco and HP that started when Cisco jumped into the server market, or mm-hmm. when HP networking got stronger, or, you know, whatever hit the powder keg first. But it's war. I mean, you know, from a reporter's perspective, it's both exciting and extremely frustrating, because I can't write anything about a new Cisco product these days without HP jumping all over me.
Sure.
And in many cases, it's very much vice versa. And as we've seen, you know, with the announcement that Cisco would upgrade its extremely popular line of Catalyst 6500 switches at July's Cisco Live conference, even a fairly remote product announcement, even a fairly benign example of market share gains, like a recent Dell'Oro Group report that was passed around showing HP, you know, eating into a little bit of Cisco's switch share, is cause for weeks of headlines and a whole lot of bad blood between these two companies. So, you know, like I said, from a reporter's perspective, Rob, it's this kind of stuff that keeps us employed. But, you know, it can get mighty frustrating, and I'm sensing a great deal of weariness from the VARs at this point, from the channelers, especially those who do carry both Cisco and HP, and who, as one of them keeps putting it to me, have to practice a whole lot of diplomacy to keep both sides happy.
Sure. Yeah, well, they're definitely keeping you busy with your phone ringing off the hook. I hope you have some vacation time coming up, too. I know you've been busy, but not just with the Cisco and networking stuff in general, but also with the telecom carrier cover story, coverage package that we have coming out. And I encourage all the listeners to check that out when it comes online and in print. And, Chad, I appreciate the time once again.
Rob, a pleasure. Thank you.
All righty.